90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today we are starting a new four-week series that I'm very excited about. It's called Wills, and we're also going to discuss beneficiary deeds, life insurance, funerals, and trust. Today our guests are Donna C. Watson, Juris Doctorate. She's a trust administrator for Country Club Trust Company, and Mara Weber, who is an attorney for legal aid. Good morning, Donna. Good morning, Mara. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, Donna, can you briefly tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, as you said, I am a trust administrator at Country Club Bank and Country Club Trust Company. I am an attorney, and I have practiced in probate and estate law in the past, and I have a background in taxation.
And Mara, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm an attorney at Legal Aid of Western Missouri. We're an area legal services firm. We're a nonprofit. We have income and asset guidelines, but we don't charge for our services.
So, Donna, you have a very distinguished background. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself more? You graduated here. You went to Chi-Town. You came back. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about that experience and what brought you back to Kansas City?
Well, what brought me back to Kansas City and what I think is kind of driving my interest in this area of law is caring for my family members. Both of my parents are deceased and went through many of the steps and processes that we're going to talk about over the next several weeks. I was always interested in some type of discipline law or codified law, something that had rules and guidelines, and so I kind of fell into this career by accident, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
And Mara, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to work for legal aid and help those who are in underserved communities?
I have always had an interest in some type of career where I could help people, and I went to law school to work at Legal Aid, and I've been there for about 10 years working in a variety of different areas that we cover.
Okay, so let's jump right in. Donna, what exactly is a will? How do we define a will document?
Okay, a will is a document that directs the distribution of assets at death. And when I say assets, I mean probate assets. And I know that you'll have more questions to kind of make that distinction, but they are assets that fall under the jurisdiction of the probate court, and the will kind of directs the distribution of those assets.
And I know the reason why is it important to have a will?
It's important for someone to have a will so that there is guidance on how they want their assets distributed. We work hard to accumulate wealth and assets during our lifetime, and we should make a plan for that distribution. If you don't have a will, you are said to die intestate. And what that means is you fall under the intestate statute of your state. That means that the state decides how your assets are distributed. And generally, that probably wouldn't be the same plan that you would have. So it's really important to have a will in place to make sure that your wishes are being met.
And as we talk about intestate, it was sad we lost the queen of soul, Aretha Franklin, last week, But then to come to find out that she had an estate of almost $80 million, but she died intestate. And, you know, we look at Prince. He had an estate of almost $500 million, and he died intestate. And at one time, the world's richest man, Howard Hughes, multi-billionaire, owner of many corporations, passed away intestate without a will, and it set off a firefight for his assets.
That's true. And I think a lot of that has to do with people, two philosophies that people have. One is, if I have children or if I have a spouse, they're automatically going to get everything, so there's really no need to create a will. And then the second misconception, I would say, is that people believe that they have time, and so they don't make this an urgent priority. Or maybe they're just afraid to kind of face their mortality. But we all are going to pass away at some point in time, so it's really important to plan.
What are some of the things that you need to make sure that you have in your will?
Okay, so when I think about creating a solid and airtight, if you will, you want to have a section that reflects your intent to create a will, like a caption that says that this is my will, it's my last will and testament, something to state clearly that this is your will. You also want to have a revocation provision that says that I'm revoking all prior wills. Sometimes you don't want to get into a situation where there are multiple versions of a will and you can't tell which one is the latest and greatest, if you will. So it's very important to have some kind of provision that revokes all prior wills. You also want to name a personal representative. You want to identify someone that you trust to administer the provisions of the probate court. So they would be administering your estate. They would help with gathering your inventory. They would assist with publications. They would assist with paying creditors and expenses. And so it's very important to understand and identify someone that you believe can do that for you. Now, one thing when you are identifying a personal representative, it's, you also have options of choosing corporate representatives. And for some families, that might be the best choice. A corporate representative would be someone like Country Club Trust. This is not a plug, though. Who could come in and is a third-party objective third party who could handle the administration of the estate. You want to make sure that you fully list, and I don't mean like a numeric list, but disclose all of your assets, what you're distributing, who you're distributing it to. And if you have children, you want to discuss distributions to them, and you want to specifically state if you're not distributing to that child, because what can happen is there can be a challenge to the will if under normal circumstances you died intestate and that child would have been able to take a portion of your estate, and then they are not able to now because you have a will. You want to make sure that it's very clear that you specifically let them out. And finally, what I would say is a very important part of the will is discussing the residuary estate, how that's going to be handled, survivorship, if you have a spouse, if you're trying to determine if they predeceased you or not, or if you died simultaneously, and making sure that that's executed properly, that it's witnessed, that it's signed. Some people sign every or initial every page of a will. Sometimes it's signed at the end, but you want to make sure that it's executed properly.
Do all wills need it? You briefly talked about probate. Can you tell listeners what is probate and do all wills need to be probated?
Okay, so probate is the process. It's the process of introducing a will to the court system. So the probate court has jurisdiction over distribution of the testator or intestator's assets. So not all wills have to go through probate. If someone is identified to have an estate that's less than $40,000, they can do a small estate affidavit. And so they're able to, and that's in Missouri, they're able to, they're able to avoid the time-consuming factor of going through probate. And many jurisdictions have similar measures in place. But going to administering a will and presenting it to the probate court requires a filing within a year of someone's death, and it does in Missouri require that you have legal representation.
So what happens if the family members can't find the will, or they find the will later, or somebody in some cases forgets to file the will and it's passed a year? What happens at that point in time?
Well, then at that point in time, you have created a situation. There are some other vehicles and avenues, but we really try to encourage people to pursue a filing within a year of death.
So if you, sad instance, but we look at the situation, what happened with the duck boat down in Branson. If you have minor children and you die without a will, what happens to your minor children in that situation?
Well, it depends on if you also have a spouse. Generally, if you die without a spouse and it's just minor children, your property can be held in a trust for the children until they become of age. Now, that's another reason why it's important to identify a guardian or a or someone that will care for your children if you become incapacitated or you die.
Okay. Well, another situation that 50% of all marriages higher end in divorce, and many people today are divorced and they're living together. What happens if one of them passes and they don't have a will, since there's no, they're not married, there's no survivor spousalship rights? What happens in that situation? Is that person left out? Can the family come in and take everything?
Okay, so let me make sure I understand the question. You're saying a divorced couple is still married?
No.
Living together?
Say you have two divorced people, divorced from different spouses. They are living together, but they don't want to get married. So what happens if one of them passes, but there is no will that says, I want all my, this is John's last will and testament, I want all my assets to go to Mary. So in that situation, Mary and John were living in a house together, they were paying the bills together. What happens in that situation? Can John's family legally come in and take everything from Mary, or what would be, would Mary have any options?
Okay, so as I'm understanding this question, these two people were never married to each other.
Correct.
But they were married to other people and are divorced.
Correct.
Okay. So my understanding of that scenario would be that, well, what we would recommend in those situations is that they would have some type of joint tenancy for property that they have acquired as a couple, but they are unmarried. Then that way the property would pass to them upon death. If they are not and have never been married, they may have a claim of homestead rights in the property, but all of the general assets of a person would pass under intestate statute. Because they're not a lineal descendant, they would not be entitled to the property otherwise. So it's important for a couple to make a decision not to marry and who are not legally bound in any way to take advantage of other measures to pass property.
Okay. So as we're determining, if a person passes without a will, and you kind of briefly touched on it earlier, since they don't, their wishes were never written down, who makes the decision in that case about who gets what and who's entitled to what?
Okay, so the intestate statute of the state in which they live in kind of gives guidance. So for Missouri, we'll use that as an example. If you die intestate and you have children but no spouse, then the children will take everything. If you have a spouse and no children, then the spouse will take it. If you have a spouse and you have descendants, but then you have descendants from other children, it becomes a little bit more complicated. And that may not have been your intention, but that's why it's very important to get something in place that would outline your wishes. So the intestate laws were created so that the passage of property wouldn't fail. It's not a one-size-fits-all scenario for situations that are not one-size-fits-all. So in order to prevent this very black-and-white distribution that's created by this statute, it's important for people to plan.
Proper planning prevents problems down the road for your heirs, and in a time when things are really upside down, topsy-turvy, one of the best things that you can do is to have your final wishes laid out so in form of a will so people would know that. So we briefly talked earlier about an executor, and usually when somebody passes, everybody, there's situations where sometimes families just can't disagree and everybody's at everybody else, and the executor is the one who gets a lot of that. What exactly is the executor, and what is their job to do?
Okay, so the executor, personal representative, sometimes they're used interchangeably. They can be identified in the will, or they can be appointed by the court if there is no will. They are the person that is responsible for, one, inventorying all the assets. So when I say inventory, I mean that they gather, they understand what assets are part of this probate estate. And they are responsible for determining values for assets such as real estate. Now, they don't have to do that independently. In fact, it's best for them to use appraisers and other professionals when necessary. But it's their responsibility to understand what assets are available and a part of this probate estate. Two, they're also responsible for making a publication, which allows creditors to know that there's an estate available, and if there are debts of the decedent, that those debts have to be satisfied. They can make claims against this probate estate, but just to the extent of the probate estate. You know, there could be creditors that come against the estate, and the estate is insolvent. There's not enough funds, but it's part of their job to kind of understand what those debts are. And so they are responsible for a publication that will give people the opportunity to make claims against the state. They're also responsible for making sure that once all the creditors have been notified and all the assets have been appraised and all the debts have been paid, funeral debts, taxes, then they're also responsible for distributing the assets. They distribute them according to the provisions of the will, and if there is no will, then they distribute it according to the intestate provisions of state.
So why should people, as I was briefly touching on, why is it important to think hard about who you're going to name as the executor? You know, you may have two children, but one may be more responsible than the other, or in that situation, as you said earlier, you may want to appoint somebody outside of that, you know, a friend or somebody else. why is it important? Because sometimes I know families just can't get along at this time, at this trying time.
Sure. It's important, and I think for the very reasons that you articulated, it's already a trying time. You want someone that's going to handle matters professionally, address all of the legal ramifications that are that come up during this time, and you want someone that is diligent. And I think people know. You know the personalities of your family members. What people sometimes don't want to do is face the reality of the personality of their family members. And in those cases, it might be best to get a corporate personal representative and name that corporation, because there's just that third party and their very objective person or entity that can go through these matters. But you don't want to put someone in a position like this that can't address matters timely, completely, and efficiently. It's already a difficult time when people pass away. People are grieving, and that grief process is can be more than people realize. So you have to have someone that has enough wherewithal to, if they're dealing with their grief, deal with their grief and handle business.
Now, in situations like the duck boat incident where an entire family was taken out and the husband may have left the wife as executor, the wife may have left the husband as executor, what happens in a situation like that where both of the people that were going to do it for the other person have passed away? Does the court step in and appoint a new trustee, or they look at another corporation or maybe another law firm to be able to represent the interests of the family in that situation?
Okay, so this is hypothetical because we don't really know what was named, but it's mm-hmm. always best to have a couple of contingent people identified. So I would never recommend naming one person just for the reasons that you said, especially married couples, because oftentimes married couples are with each other, they travel with each other, and so there are likely instances that they could pass away at the same time. Having said that, if a contingent person or a corporate named executor or representative is not identified, then the courts will step in. They don't want the document to fail for lack of having someone serve as a representative.
Okay, so we just had another guest step in. It's Larry J. from my place in space. Good morning, Larry. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, Joseph. As you, you're always doing a fantastic job and everything. Good topics, things that really of interest to a lot of people that are people concerned about. And I was listening to the lady a few minutes ago about if someone passes away and there's no one there to take over their assets or find out where their money goes or wherever, you know. And I had a situation, and I was going to ask the lady about, because my uncle passed away a few years ago and everything. I was the only person here in Kansas City that was his next of kin. He had a son that was lived out in Oakland, California. Unfortunately, he was in a transit house. He was strung out and stuff. So anyway, I made the the effort to call and get in touch with him, and I did to get in touch with him and let him know that his dad was going to be dying in the next week or so. He, of course, being strung out, he had no clue and really didn't care. So it was left up to me, the final details, to get everything done. And he had money, I know, left in the bank. And I talked to people, and they said, well, at this moment, there's nothing I can do, even though I am his nephew here, and his son is out in Oakland, California. So, and I really wasn't concerned about the money. I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to see if I can get that money to go out to him. But nothing happened. So wherever that money went, it went somewhere, and I haven't the slightest idea where it went to. What happens with that money?
It's a good question, Donna. What I know, if it's usually, if I'm correct, if something happens like that, the money goes into a state fund, and then the heirs have to apply for that money from the state fund. But correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and there's an unclaimed property fund as well in certain states. And you can make claims against unclaimed property accounts, bank accounts. But what you have to do is have some type of showing. If you did probate the estate, you can say that you didn't realize that this was an asset. If it's if the estate had never been probated, you would have to show some type of documentation about heirship. You probably have to. Not probably. I know for certain you have to submit proof like birth certificates, death certificates, something to show lineal, that you're a lineal descendant. So there are ways of getting property that has kind of lapsed, if you will, as unclaimed property.
Okay. At this point, would I possibly be able to call back out to Oakland, California, because his mother lives out there with him? Could I get in touch with her, and she has documents to prove? Would that be the best way to go with that?
You know what? This sounds like a very specific question, and so what I would rather do, we could talk a little bit offline about, you know, specific suggestions. One of the things that I really I caution about is giving like blanket advice about very specific situations, mm-hmm. especially on the air. So I can talk to you offline about that particular situation.
Good. Thank you. You answered it just like I thought you would. You're very good. And I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you so much for that, Donna. Question, though, what is the cost to, if you're in Missouri or in Kansas, the metropolitan area, what's the cost to really probate a will? Is it really expensive, or is it something that can be manageable? I know you said the small, if you had $40,000 or less, the small affidavit, but what's the average cost if you say if somebody has a house and a few assets, you know, maybe a $200,000 estate, what would be the cost in the metropolitan area to probate that?
Okay, so it really depends on the size of the estate. And so there is a schedule that the Missouri probate law statute provides, and it's a range in fees. So the fee schedule is posted on the county website to give you kind of a range so that you'd understand where you're going. But it can be as low as 5% of like $5,000 all the way up to $26,550. So it depends on the size of the estate is the answer. But there's also other things that have to be paid. So if you do identify a personal representative in your documents, you might consider putting in your will or adding to the will that they would serve without a bond. Because if they do have to pay a bond, the bond is specific to the amount of the estate. That is an insurance policy to make sure that the person that you have identified as the personal representative will not, you know, abscond with the funds and not distribute them in the way that they should. Okay. So there's bond premiums. There's the cost of publication. There are court costs, you know, if it becomes a litigated issue, if there's a litigated issue. If you need to sell real estate during the administration of this probate estate, there are costs with that. And then, of course, there are legal fees. So it's not just the cost of the filings. It can be quite costly, and I think that's something that people tend to underestimate. So it's a very good question, and I hope I gave a...
No, you gave a great answer. So now back to the root of the issue. What is the average cost to have a will drafted? I know a lot of people think it's expensive. I know there's programs like NOLO. You can get them online. You can do NOLO does software online to do a will. It's like $79. There's WillMaker if you want to do yours. But I know lawyers tend to look at multiple options and worst-case scenarios, and I know those may not be great options for a lot of people, maybe for some people, but what's the average cost of people going to have a will filed for a moderate estate of maybe $200,000?
Well, it really depends on the attorney that you use. I've seen anywhere from like $500 to, you know, $2,500, and that is because most practicing attorneys don't just prepare a will. They'll prepare a will, they'll prepare a power of attorney, they'll prepare health care directives. They really want a companion documents that will help with your goals, your estate planning goals. So some people won't do just a will. But then there are times where people have used the software or they use something that they find online. Those scenarios tend to be best when someone doesn't have complicated family structure. And when I say complicated family structure, multiple children, maybe by different partners, you've been married and divorced, you have minor children, the more complicated or the more facts, I'll put it that way, the more facts that you have to consider when making distributions of assets, the more complicated the will will need to be. And when I say complicated, the more comprehensive is probably a better word, the will would need to be. And I think that that's something that people should invest in. I think it's worth talking to an attorney, not just because this is an area of practice for me and Mara, but because an attorney will think of things that you may not think of. You may direct distribution to your two children. Well, one child may be incapacitated. What provisions are going to be made for that child? Your children may be minors and you pass away. So what are you going to do in that situation? Those aren't the average situations that are addressed in the standard will that you get online and you pull down and sign and you feel like you have a will. So I think it's important to seek counsel. We seek counsel for a lot of things. You seek professionals when you want to get your car serviced or when you have medical issues. You should seek a professional when you have matters of such importance as distributing your assets.
Thank you for that great comment. We're having a great session here on our first segment of Wills. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson, and our guests today are Donna C. Watson, Juris Doctor, Trust Administrator for Country Club Trust Company, and Mara Weber, Attorney for Legal Aid. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations, and you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's only community radio station. Our subject today is wills and beneficiary deeds, and our guests are Donna C. Watson, Juris Doctor, Trust Administrator for Country Club Trust Company, and Maria Weber, Attorney at Legal Aid, who's going to be discussing beneficiary deeds in 1 second. Before we transition here, Donna, one thing about the will that we haven't touched. If you have a will, where should it be kept or who should you entrust to make sure that they have a copy to? Because that old movie, Daddy's Died, Who's Got the Will? You can't find, it seems like in that situation, people pass. Nobody can find the will. And then by the time they stumble on it a year later or maybe 9 months later as they're cleaning the apartment out, but nobody actually told them where the will was. What is the best thing that people should do about that?
I think the person should keep the will somewhere that other people can identify and get access to it. I don't like to say keep it in your house, keep it in your, in your workplace. I don't want to say a particular place, but it's some place that makes sense from your family's perspective where they can touch and get to it in a timely manner. You can communicate that to them, but I don't think it's of good value. It used to be people keep them in a safe deposit box, but then how can you get to the safe deposit box? And then so it becomes like a big frustration in terms of trying to get the will. So I say keep it somewhere where the people that are close to you know where it is and can access it upon your death.
Okay. A few statistics about wills. A new study found that 58% of adults say they don't have a will in place. On top of that, 64% of parents with kids under the age of 18 have no formal estate plan at all. A survey from Caring.com found that only 4 in 10 Americans have a will or a living trust in place. 78% of millennials, those are individuals who are age 18 to 36, and 64% of Generation Xers ages 37 to 52 do not have a will. They ask people one question: Why do so many people fail to tackle a complete estate planning? The top 2 reasons were they hadn't gotten around to it, 47%. They didn't think they had enough assets to leave to anybody. So I would say this: if you've got a dollar, you've got an asset to leave some to someone.
So I thought of one more answer in response to your question. If you have an attorney that has prepared your will, they'll have a copy of that will. And so if your family members know who that attorney is, they can provide a copy at your desk.
So maybe it's a good idea to put the attorney's name or card in with the life insurance policy, because people know where the life insurance policy is when somebody passes, or they can put a copy of that will in there. And so people can know exactly where they're going to be. We've got a caller on line 2. Marie, can you tell us your comment? What part of Kansas City are you calling from?
Yes, I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay, go ahead.
And my question is, if a person has no real assets, and all of their assets are in, like, their retirement funds and life insurance and those kinds of things, all of which have designated beneficiaries, what would be the need for having a will?
Donna, can
I think over your lifetime, your asset accumulation is different. You might be at a point in your life where all of your assets can be transferred without probate, and that's great. But then there may be that one-off situation that tomorrow you decide to buy a car, and you buy the car, you haven't gotten the deed yet, the title yet. You know, they mail that title to you in 3 weeks and or however many weeks it is. But my point is you pass before you get a copy of the title. And so then, okay, so then you're trying to retitle this car to someone else. You haven't designated anyone. That's a very, it's a hypothetical, but it
exactly
does happen.
And I do have an automobile, and I do have a secondary name on that as well in case of my death. Okay. So I've made, I think, the necessary requirements for any, the car is the only real property I have, and a ring, and all of those have been designated. I mean, I do have a will, actually, but I don't understand the reason for having to pay someone to parcel out this, this property if it's already been designated by me before my death.
Well, I do understand your comment, and so, not everyone has been, I don't even want to say diligent enough, not everyone may have identified beneficiaries on all of their assets. You may be an anomaly, but we say this is information for, like, the broad audience, and every comment may not necessarily apply to your circumstance, but generally we say it's important to have a will in case there is a situation where something is not titled to anyone else but you, nor is it jointly held by anyone else, and you want to make sure that it passes at death.
Okay.
So
as I said, I do have a will, but as I said, I think my executor, which is one of my children, and then I do have backups with my other children for an executor. So what does an executor do if there's no reason to designate anything? I mean, does he still get does he get charged for having to take something to court to delegate all this stuff?
Well, if there's nothing to really probate, then there's no reason to go to probate court. But it's kind of like I have insurance on my car. I didn't have a car wreck last month, but I have insurance on my car. The will is just kind of insurance to help you distribute property that may be probate assets at your death. You may not have probate assets, but you have the will in case you do.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, that's all I wanted to know. I did not want anybody to be charged, my executor. I mean, if he presents the will, I don't know. They always say you should have a will. You should have a will. But then if you don't have real property, you're wondering if you're causing more concern, you know, if you're making it more work than it needs to be for the people that you leave behind. That's my concern.
Right. So I think it's important to understand which assets are probate assets and which assets are non-probate assets. And it sounds like, and I'm saying sounds like, it sounds like you have all non-probate assets. So, therefore, probating your will may not be necessary.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Marie, for the comment.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. So, as of 2017, Missouri and Kansas are only two of 27 states that recognize transfer on death or beneficiary deeds. Mara, what exactly is a beneficiary deed?
A beneficiary deed is a relatively short but incredibly useful document that allows someone to say who they want to receive their house upon their death.
So a beneficiary deed only works on a house, correct?
Correct. But there is a transfer upon death if you have a bank account, checking account, savings account. Anyone can go to their bank and say who they want to be their transfer upon death person, which is very useful. And, again, for a car, you can contact Department of Motor Vehicles and say who.
What you do is you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, you fill out a form, you want to put on a TOD, and you put the person's name. And then they turn around, you give them another $750, and if something happens to you, the person can come down and automatically transfer their car. Right. But say I decide to transfer my car to my youngest son, and I no longer want to do it to him. I know I can go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles as long as I'm still alive and take his name off. So if somebody appoints somebody for a beneficiary deed for a property, can they remove that person?
So a beneficiary deed, in order to become a legally binding document, has to be recorded with the county recorder of deeds where the house is located. And so if someone records a beneficiary deed saying, I want daughter number one to be my beneficiary upon death, and then they change their mind and want son number two to be the beneficiary, I would suggest recording a new beneficiary deed designating the new person and revoking the old beneficiary deed.
We've got a caller on line two. Jack, can you tell us your name and what your comment is or question? Hello? Hello, Jack, are you there?
I'm there, yes.
Can you tell us your comment or your question?
Yeah, thank you. It's a great show. I have an existing will, and I'm going to change my name. I'm transgender, and I'm going to change my name. If I change my name, do I have to go back through and change all the documents, all the will documents, or can people just look in the public record and see, okay, this is the same person, I just changed the name?
Donna, that's a great question.
I'll hang up and take my message out there.
Thank you. So, Donna, if he has a name change, does he have to change his name on his will?
My can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My recommendation is that he update all of his legal documents with his new legal name.
Okay. So there's your question to you, Jack. So you change all your legal documents to your new legal name so there'd be no question. So we're going to go back, Mara. So if you draft a beneficiary deed and you want to change the person, you can just select a new one. What is the cost to have a beneficiary deed drafted? Is it an expensive document?
I don't know how much a private attorney would charge. I don't think it would be in the, you know, high hundreds or thousands of dollars, unless it's part of a bigger estate plan. But legal aid does not charge any of our clients for our legal services. So if someone was under our income and resource guidelines, we would draft the beneficiary deed for free. There is a charge for filing it with the Recorder of Deeds office. However, right now I believe it's $21 for the first page and $3 for the second, but you know, that cost could change at some point.
Okay. So I know that's one of the great things. So if a person has a beneficiary deed and the person that deeded them that property passes, what's the next step they need to do at that point?
So the first thing that I would suggest is that they get a copy, if not a few copies, of the certificate of death and check it for accuracy. Sometimes there are errors in the birth date, things like that, that can cause problems down the line. So the first thing is get that and make sure it's accurate. And then I would contact the Recorder of Deeds office with that certificate of death.
And it's usually you take the document down, and then they turn the property over to you into your name. So then, hence, you have avoided probate by just having that simple document.
Right. And if you then have the transfer upon death with your car and bank account, possibly all of your major assets are resolved.
And I will say, being a former neighborhood president, that I used to every year have legal aid come in. They had the beneficiary deed project at that time, and we actually had one senior citizen who signed up for it and passed away a couple years later, and his daughter was able to transfer the house easily. And it's, if you're a neighborhood president, these are different. These are conversations that we really need to have in certain neighborhoods, especially those east of Truce, where houses pass from family member to family member, but they may not do any documentation. And this is an easy way for a parent to establish their concerns of who they want to have their house after their passing, without it costing a lot of money. And if I believe the project that you all did before was if you were age 62 and over, then they would do the beneficiary deed for you all just for the recording fee. That saves you a whole lot of money. So, Donna, I have one question. Sometimes people want to leave money to their cats or to their dogs, and pets cannot inherit money, correct?
That's correct, but you can establish provisions to have someone care for your pet. And I have seen that in documents.
So if you think about it, if you love your pet, but also you just brought that point up, a great thing that you need to do is if you have a pet, establish in your will who you want to take care of that pet, and then you can leave that person money to be able to ensure that the pet can, you know, live the life that it was living while I was with you. But that's something, another reason why you may want to have a will, correct?
Yes, that's a great other reason why you may create a will. Yes,
Donna, wills are a part of estate planning. What are other things that people should ensure that they have as a part of a proper estate plan?
Well, I think a power of attorney is important, and a power of attorney gives someone financial authority over your affairs. That can be a shifting or springing authority, which just means it may arise at some point in time, typically when people may become incapacitated or adjudicated incapacitated, then the power of attorney can come in. Or it can be a power that's simultaneous with the person's lifetime. So you can give a power, and the person gives a power of attorney to someone to assist with financial matters. What we are always concerned about is that with this power of attorney, you give someone authority to handle your financial matters. There are provisions in most power of attorneys that allow for people to sell real estate, to invest. And so you really want to make sure that you're giving that power to someone that you trust. It's important because there may be times where you become elderly, but not necessarily incapacitated. But you need assistance so that power of attorney gives your family members or whoever it is that you have identified authority to handle your financial affairs. I also think a living trust or living will, some type of advance health care directive is important. People understand what your wishes are in terms of resuscitation and how much additional assistance you want in your care. It's always a difficult time when someone is going through health challenges, and you really, if you can, want to relieve the burden from your family members of making those decisions. If it's documented what you want and what you what your preferences are, then they can just rely on the document. And then finally, we talked about the power of attorney, the healthcare directive, and then you may just want to just have some other information, just kind of written down what some of your wishes are. And I'm not talking about things that would go in a will. I'm talking about just general things. Maybe you want to discuss what type of burial you want. Sometimes I think in order to honor our loved ones, we may be inclined to spend, you know, money to really show our reverence and love for them. Maybe that's not really your wish. So it might just be important to have some of those things jot down too.
So as we were saying earlier, Mara, the beneficiary deed, you can do a transfer on death, which is a type of beneficiary deed for your car. You can do the beneficiary deed or transfer of death for your house. You can do a transfer of death, a beneficiary deed on your bank account. And you can also name a beneficiary, as our caller called in and said, they have retirement funds. And that's one of the things that people most often don't think about, that pension that they may be getting, some if they've got 401k pension money there. So those are all things that can be transferred with a beneficiary deed or transfer on deed type document.
Right. Yeah, and taking care of what might seem like a short fix to a problem is so powerful whenever after you pass away. And I would also second Donna talking about the powers of attorney. Again, that's not something that you can get after you need it. If you have a power of attorney in place, then if something should happen to you, your family member, whoever you designate as your power of attorney, can immediately start helping you and making the decisions that need to be made, paying your mortgage, paying your bills, as opposed to having to go and get a court guardianship, which, if it's an emergency, could be quick, but it could be a weeks to months long process.
And that's definitely so. I would definitely like to thank Donna and Mara for being our guest today. Donna also being the real trooper. She is calling in. She wasn't feeling too well, but she believed in this topic enough that she wanted to definitely make sure that there was some good, important information. And that's what we try to do every week on Cowtown Conversations, to put out vital information to help those in our community. I know we're talking about a subject that people may not want to think about, but it's a very important topic that impacts you whether you have a dollar or thousands of dollars. And it also gives you peace of mind knowing that your last wishes will be taken care of and just reduce the stress on your family and that your assets are divided in the manner in which you want. Don't leave the future of your heirs in someone else's hands. Get a will, and if you can, you can look at NOLO, you can, you know, if you need will maker, some of those things, but also make sure it's drafted correctly. You know, sometimes people can do something different. And if you have a house, especially if you want somebody, we want to pass to the next generation, begin to build wealth. And if you're a senior citizen, definitely contact legal aid, and they will do that for you for free. And those are things that we definitely want to look at. So thank you, ladies, for being our guest today. We're never in Cowtown Conversations without our community minute. Friends of the Kansas City Public Library will sell recently published hardback fiction and nonfiction popular young adult and audiobooks at bargain prices of $2 at their Saturday sale September the 1st at City Market in the breezeway of the northeast corner of the River Market north of the Steamboat Arabia Museum. For more information, call 816-701-3468. Convoy of Hope is coming to Kansas City September the 8th at Seven Oaks Park, 3700 Kinson. Starting time is 10 a.m. Many services will be available for the community, such as job and career services, nutrition, education, health services, haircuts, and for more information, go to Convoy of Hope. Join us next week as we continue this second installment as we discuss life insurance and why you should have it with David Whelan, financial planner. For Cowtown Conversations, has been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day. Stay out of the rain. And stay tuned for My Place with Larry J. And we're going to go out with something a little bit different today. So just putting some things on people's minds.